when it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Even that career advice that, you know, I think it's lacking out there. A lot of people force people to go to uni and then just get professional jobs, and it's not about following purpose and passion. And
this is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Tyrone Shum, and in this episode, we're speaking with Chris Bates, founder of Wealthfall. He will share the traveling stories that shaped his wealth view, including exploring the beauty of countries such as India and Egypt. As well as this, learn how to find success without a university degree, and a common investing mistake involving supply and demand issues. Wealthfall is a mortgage broking business with the goal to help young families build financial wealth and allow them to live a fulfilling life.
It's been going for about 8 years. You know, fortunately, it's been going really well, especially in the last few years. We've been able to grow a pretty big team, and we've sort of grown to one of the bigger sort of smaller boutique mortgage brokers out there. You know, all our clients are sort of young couples, you know, 30s, 40s, you know, families, etc. And they're mainly doing, you know, one of three things, you know, either buying their first home, maybe they've left it a little bit later, and they're thinking about doing a big upgrade or a renovation. They're sort of having that dilemma on what to do first and how to make it happen. Or they're a little bit further in the line, they've got a happy home and they're like, okay, let's how do we sort of do things for our retirement? And so, you know, generally that's sort of what we do. Our average loan is much higher than most brokers. It's probably the, you know, 1 to 1.5 per client, whereas most brokers are sort of that, you know, sub a million mark. Yeah, that's a bit about us.
With his business performing so well, Bates is smashing his professional goals. As well as this, he's also reaching dreams in his personal life.
I'd married to my wife, Melanie, got a couple of young kids under two. Two under two at the moment. I probably can't say it anymore. She had a second birthday on Tuesday, so I shouldn't need to change my lingo. Two under two in 1 month.
Bates considers himself to be extremely lucky to have two children, one girl and one boy.
I mean, my daughter's amazing. I've always wanted to be a dad. And so when that moment happened, you know, I did want a daughter first as well. And, you know, we're very lucky to have that. I think it's so special. She's amazing. I just, you know, that's what we, you know. Yeah, it's hard to sort of put into words what it means to be a dad. And yeah, she's at this age now where she's sort of communicating and she's talking back and she's, you know, telling us what she wants, which is an interesting sort of step from, yeah, not being able to have those conversations.
Evidently, Bates' family is a massive priority in his life. This means that he has a short work week.
So I run a pretty tight, because we've got a pretty decent sized business in terms of clients, and we have a, you know, a lot of clients coming to us. So I at the moment, you know, just due to family commitments and what I value, and I run a, you know, basically only working around 30 odd hours a week. You know, I run 9 to 4, you know, 4 days and have Friday mornings off. But what am I doing on those hours is my role is to do the strategy for clients. So, you know, I'll do, you know, like today, you know, probably 5 to 10 calls of new clients who come to us, and we're really talking through, you know, what's happened in their past, where they want to head, what are they doing with their current properties, what's their challenges, and then we come up with a bit of a plan on what's the next best move. Then we'll get documents from them, and the team will make it happen from a loan point of view once we've done the strategy. So all day, every day, I'm just talking to people. I'm producing content, making podcasts, writing posts on LinkedIn, you know, touching base with existing clients when they're, you know, changes in their situation, what are they going to do next? And so my role in the business is just really to find the clients, you know, through mainly it's producing content, you know, or relationships that people refer to us. and to do their strategy to figure out what's the next best move. We don't buy property. You know, we're massive believers in quality buyers agents. We've gone and, you know, as soon as I hear of someone who's good that's not in our network, I'll go and suss them out and potentially add them. But we refer to individual buyers agents in individual pockets all over the country. So not one company. We took over 20 in Sydney, for example.
On the days that Bates does not work, he spends quality time with his family.
Oh, we're massive believers, not believers, but massive lovers of nature and travel and exploring. You know, usually one weekend a month we're going somewhere, you know, obviously only in Australia the last couple of years, but, you know, we're massive lovers of travel and nature. So if we're not traveling, we're going out hiking and walking and, yeah, we just, you know, the best things in life are free, to be honest. It's just sort of being out and about, and we're very fortunate. We live up in the Northern Beaches, so we're surrounded by water and nature, so...
Bates was born in Melbourne, but he and his family moved due to his father's job.
We moved to Newcastle because he was in the Air Force and there's the big RAF base up in there. He ended up leaving the Air Force and we ended up just staying in Newcastle, for all my sort of teenage years. I went to Lambton High in Newcastle and I never really connected with sort of schooling. I would do well, find, you know, results, but the actual schooling process and sitting down and learning things, I did it. And so I had a very different type of brain. I think I had always a brain that was, I was very fortunate that I was good with numbers. And that's just not being arrogant. I sort of was. And, and school was, you know, not really a challenge for me per se, especially in those sort of number subjects.
After finishing school, Bates followed the expected path and went to university.
I sort of went to uni for a year, you know, studied commerce, always did well financially, but in results, but it was never a typical sort of, you know, straight A student just loving studying. I wanted that real life world experience more, I guess, than, you know, just, you know, A's. So I knew I didn't really want to go to uni because I wasn't loving school, right? So I didn't really want to do that study. I wanted to get out and work and, you know, basically. And so I got an apprenticeship as an accountant. I guess you'd call it a traineeship, and I was doing uni part-time, but I could, you know, even after a year I was sort of well ahead of where I should be, and I was sort of doing things that, you know, people were doing it for 5 or 6 years in that accounting practice were doing, and I was like, look, if I'm going to be doing this in another 5 or 6 years, I'm going to be setting myself insane. So I moved to Sydney because I thought, well, maybe I want to become in funds management and I want to become an investment banker. So I got a job at Platinum, but then after 6-12 months in sort of the, you know, administration, sort of investor services side, and making friends with lots of traders and the investment bankers there, I could see that a lot of them were extremely stressed and extremely unhappy, and were working stupid hours, they didn't really have much meaning. And so I didn't feel like I wanted to be an investment banker, I guess. And then I met a financial advisor and thought, you know what, this could be a better direction for me. And so I moved to London and became a financial advisor.
After watching his sister successfully create a life in London, Bates knew that he could do the same.
I was only 20 at the time, and so I thought, look, you know, go over an experience. So I knew that I could potentially get a job over there as well. You know, I sort of made a few, you know, inquiries, and I was like, yeah, this will be fine. The benchmarks of financial advice are really quite low in terms of the study requirements. It's something that's improved over the last, you know, 10 years, but, you know, this is back to 2007. So, met a financial advisor, become an advisor after a month. Pretty scary, to be honest. And you could do that in Australia up until recently. You know, they've just finally increased the standards to a degree in Australia. But, you know, back in the 2000s, I guess you call it, you know, it was very low. And, you know, after a month, I was out there advising people and it was, you know, pretty scary. And that's where I actually got kicked out of the first bank. I was their top advisor in the area because I could see I actually got access to data that I could see the whole bank was mis-selling products. And I raised it and we had arguments with our boss and I thought, you know what, the grass is greener. I'll go to another bank, and went to another bank and saw it was pretty much exactly the same. Years later, all that bad advice actually came out and the banks got into a lot of trouble over it. But I could see it firsthand because I could see what I was doing versus the rest of the country and said, look, they're just mis-selling products. And so, it made a real sort of, that first 5 years in advice, I was very conflicted because, you know, I was very passionate about helping people, making sure we're doing the right thing, you know, but I could see the industry was heading in the wrong direction. And, it wasn't, you know, giving great advice, to be honest.
While he was in London, Bates took advantage of his ability to travel.
Oh, absolutely. We featured lots of traveling and, you know, had an amazing group of friends that were probably all around 10, 15 years older than me, to be honest. I'm still very close to a lot of those friends now. It was such a special time. And I think it was also interesting to do it at such early age. It made me sort of become very independent. Friends sort of allowed me to mature a little bit faster, just in terms of networks. And seeing the world and especially travel does that. It sort of makes you understand the world on a bigger level. We went to sort of Chamonix, sort of skiing. We went to obviously all your Berlins and your Prague and all those sort of cute little towns. Paris, we used to go to Paris quite a bit because, you know, just jump on the Eurostar and straight down, food you've never tasted before. The traveling that really sort of resonates with me is the traveling I probably did after London. It's the places like India and Africa, Egypt. Obviously, Egypt's in Africa. They're probably the holidays that I sort of really love the most. You know, Sri Lanka, where we're sort of, just looking at nature, to be honest, and getting to really be in part of the community and et cetera. So we really just go and look at wildlife.
Traveling to those countries played a big role in shaping Bates' worldview.
You do come back a lot more grateful. You won't whinge about the things that you used to whinge about. You see things that aren't fair and you see things that are tough for people, but you also see happiness and you see, they can be, people are very happy around the world with very little, and it's not the other things that make people happy. And you actually form really close connections with either people you're traveling with or people, etc. So I just think it makes you a lot more grounded, and you understand what really matters in life a lot more after visiting these places. But there's so much beauty in these places as well. Yeah, maybe they're crowded, but India is absolutely stunning, especially when you get up into places like the mountains. Africa is just unbelievable, in terms of wildlife, etc. And so yes, you've definitely got the issues with populations and, standard of living, but then you've also got beautiful countries in these places as well and beautiful people. So, I find a lot more benefits going to places like that than I would going to, say, New York or London or a major city and, that's obviously really just a carbon copy of each other in some sense.
After living and working in London for 4 years, Bates decided to come back to his roots in Melbourne.
My grandfather wasn't very well at the time, and that was one of the reasons why I came back. I was like, if I don't go now and something happens, then I'll regret it. And it was sort of what turned out that way. Unfortunately, a couple of years later, he did pass away, but I spent 2 years living in Melbourne and seeing him every week. Also after living in London and, living in Sydney for a bit, I hadn't scratched that itch, to be honest. I still wanted to sort of see a different part of Australia. And so living in Melbourne for a couple of years, it's been also great because, my nana's still there, my dad's still there, so I know Melbourne really well and I do visit them quite often. And so we've got lots of clients who are buying in Melbourne and I can really guide them on that sort of journey as well because I know the city really well.
When he came back to Melbourne, Bates continued to work as a financial advisor.
So I was still working as a financial advisor in 2011 and I joined a practice that was probably offering sort of, quite cookie cutter advice, it was a type of business. And then I thought, look, I'm not sure if this is really for me anymore. I need to get into a better practice. And that's when I took a bit of a turn. I went from working with a lot of older clients, 50, 60, 70s, 80s. That's traditionally where most financial advice is driven, to help people retire, basically. And I joined a company that's really worked with, 30s and 40s. And that was a company called Property Planning Australia. They're quite well known in the mortgage broking sort of industry. They're based in Melbourne. And I joined as a financial advisor within that business. And after about sort of 12, 18 months, I was like, generating a lot of new clients for the business in different ways. And I also wanted to control the conversation around the mortgages and the advice around that, rather than just the, insurance and super and other things. We were doing joint meetings with mortgage brokers and I thought, I just want to become a mortgage broker. I just want to be the one person driving that, rather than the conversation going in a different direction than I think it should. And so I became a broker then. So I was working as a financial advisor and a broker. You know, we kept our financial advice and started kept doing that till 2020, so only a couple of years ago. But, you know, in parallel, we were growing ourselves as mortgage brokers. Yeah, we now work with lots of financial advisors. We kind of carved out a niche in financial advice world where people had seen that we became brokers and had seen our sort of success. And we really just focus 100% on the property discussion with young clients. And so a lot of financial advisors were referring to us and, you know, and so they still refer to us now because they know we understand, you know, what quality advice is and how to work with them.
Bates founded Wealth on July of 2014.
We're coming up to 8 years now. It wasn't called, it was called Canopy Private. I was a little bit torn whether I wanted to work with a lot of wealth management clients still or just go for that younger clientele. And then we shifted to wealth. I'm not exactly sure, maybe 12, 18 months into business. It was at an interesting point in time in the business where I was very passionate around, you know, wealth moving into the right direction. I was frustrated with wealth management industry because it was all around numbers and making money and profit, and it lost the whole meaning of what it's all about. And that's actually true wealth, and, you know, and wealth is in many forms, whether it's health or family or relationships or experiences or purpose, etc. And so it was just really a play on that to talk more about true wealth, and, you know, and make people really understand they are wealthy. And, you know, this goes back to those travel discussions, you know, it's all about your mindset or your perception of what's wealth. And so that's where it sort of came from, it's sort of mindful wealth and to sort of think about it in those terms. But yeah, it still is a bit misunderstood, to be honest. I think people, when they see the word wealth, they think naturally to money. It's hard for people to make that brain switch.
Coming up after the break, we hear about Bates' first investment property.
But we bought a house in Melbourne a few years ago.
He shares common mistakes made when investing.
We know exactly what doesn't work through looking at all what they've done over the years.
We'll learn how to identify low risk and long-term investments.
I do a lot of reading around sort of how cities form. I'll track every development, etc.
And that's next. I'm Tyrone Shum and you're listening to Property Investory. Hey, let's be real. Deals that can yield 20 to 30% per annum do exist. Don't believe me? Well, here's a story about property development I invested in Victoria. This developer had the project fully funded beforehand, but he and his family suffered a loss, a circumstance that led him to be unable to proceed with the development. So I stepped in, and in 2 weeks, we funded the shortfall, allowing for the development to continue. 5 months later, the development was refinanced and we received our funds back with interest. Yes, there are amazing opportunities in the property market like this one. So, do you want to get a better return with lower risk on your money? Then register your interest by visiting propertyinvestory.com. For his first investment property, Bates stuck to an area inside of his comfort zone.
It was about 4 or 5 years ago. I used to do a lot of shares, you know, all through my 20s. I had margin loans and invest a lot into the sort of the business, the sort of startup and traveling, etc. But we bought a house in Melbourne a few years ago. It was a tough market. It was sort of 2015, 16. It was when the business could have had the income to sort of do it. It was just sort of house in the inner north of Melbourne.
This property became a principal place of residence for Bates and his family.
We did live in it, so we got sort of 6 years sort of, tax-free exemption. The idea was if we did stay in Melbourne, then we could sort of renovate it and live in it. But if we decide to leave Melbourne and move to Sydney, then we will, buy a house in Sydney, for example, and keep as an investment. We've still got it down there now.
A property investment journey can be viewed as a learning curve. Bates takes away the lessons learnt from his clients.
Look, I think that the learnings are sort of out there through all the clients. You know, we speak to, you know, over 700 new clients last year. So, and then if you multiply that over the years, and we know exactly what doesn't work through looking at all what they've done over the years. For us, fortunately, I haven't gone and bought down the quantity strategy or just focused on getting properties. We bought that, then we bought another house, and then we've done a big reno on that. And then our next decision will be another block of land and then do a build on that. And so, we've always believed in the quality over quantity strategy. And we're very fortunate as well. We bought up in the Northern Beaches in Sydney and, pre-COVID. And so that's done very well for us as well. But what works for clients is buying in, aspirational parts of capital cities where there's higher incomes and buying assets that they would really love as a family, things that are in scarce supply and things that they're willing to go into a lot of debt for. And that's the stuff that's gone up a lot in Brisbane in the last, 12 months. It's the stuff that's gone up a lot in Sydney, and it's stuff that continues to go up well in Melbourne. That's what we sort of follow ourselves, and that's what we would recommend our clients to do.
Bates has noticed a common investing mistake involving supply and demand.
I think it all comes down to simply thinking about things from a demand and supply and really going back to, I know that sounds so basic. Everyone's like, yeah, no, I get it. But a lot of people don't apply it, right? So if you think about things, what doesn't work for a lot of people is apartments, for example, and definitely high density, et cetera. The reason is supply. And secondly, the demand's not, you can just keep on building more of them. And the problem is that demand is always not the greatest of demand. High income families don't want to be raising their kids in high density apartments. They want to be buying houses, et cetera. So you have a demand issue, but you also have a supply issue. The same thing is when you might say, well, I'll buy a house in the outer suburbs, for example, of capital cities. Well, yeah, okay, maybe supply is limited, not always, because there's greenfield estates, but then also the demand's not that strong. The higher incomes generally gravitate towards closer to the city where there's greater lifestyle when they start doing better. So yeah, you may have a supply restriction in some sense, but demand, so income growth sort of there, et cetera. That's why we don't really believe in sort of the quantity strategy and playing in those more affordable markets. So generally a lot of new property hasn't worked for really anybody. Now people have got lucky with off the plan purchases, at the start of a boom and then have sold their, off the plan, it may be just at settlement, et cetera. But very few that doesn't work. We very much rarely see, even people doing duplexes and things like that. We find a lot of people buy the land too expensive. They overspend on the build and then the market shifts over that time frame to get it done. We haven't seen much success in that space. So it's really the people who have come to us and they've got the most, lots of properties. To be honest, they're the ones who are usually in the biggest mess, and we usually have to unwind their portfolios. It was even one yesterday, he's had to unwind it, and he bought a house in New Farm in Brisbane 2 years ago. That house, he paid, 1.8, it's probably worth over 3 mil now. He had like 8 properties, I think it was, or 7 or 8. He's gone down to sort of still got 2 of them, but then he shifted his borrowing capacity into a quality asset, and that's where he's made all his money, through a simple decision and buying a quality asset. And so the people we've seen do the best is the people who have just gone and carefully just bought a quality asset and kept it and focus on that rather than trying to buy as many properties as you can.
Since COVID-19 and people beginning to work from home, the issue of supply and demand has shifted.
I think prior to COVID, there was a real pressure that time was the most important thing for people, and they had to sort of get back to their house as quick as they can, and they didn't want to spend an hour on the train twice a day, 5 days a week. And so absolutely, they would pay a premium to reduce their commute time, right? COVID shifted that. And so what it does, it did, it created people to look at areas that are great lifestyle but are a bit further away, and the train stations didn't matter as much. So what it is, shifted demand obviously to pure lifestyle locations like the Byrons and Sunshine Coast, etc. But it also moved it to the sister cities, the north of Wollongong, the Central Coast, the Mornington, Geelong. But it moved to the premium parts of those markets, because if people said they're going to leave, the inner ring of Sydney, they wanted the premium end of the Central Coast. So places like Avoca went up a lot there, and Thurool in Wollongong, the real nice pockets of these lifestyle age. Not everything in these locations went up anywhere near as much as the premium end. So that's definitely what happened is you would find people were willing to space is more important, obviously, because, you know, they are working from home or they're, and so they, before they would want to hug the train lines, but now they're willing to go a little bit further and maybe it's a double leg commute and they're like a bus to the train station they're willing to look at. And so places like in the upper north shore of Sydney, like St. Ives and things like that, they became much more desirable because it's a great place to live, but commute was holding it back before. Where we are is exactly the same, you know, commute, people are willing to commute from further. And so I do think quality sort of shifted because the commute wasn't as important to drive whether people were moving there as much.
Bates does not think that this is going to change.
I don't think it's going back. You know, I think top talent are demanding flexibility. They've had a taste of it. And, you know, if they going to apply for a job, they're going to make sure that that's, you know, part of their terms. And you know, maybe the 20s and 30s are going to want to be in the city to get those promotions and things like that. But a lot of the top talent in that 30, 35 plus range, they're going to want flexibility. And so then the whole company's going to have to offer, et cetera. And so the return to work thing, I think, is, you know, yeah, potentially in some form, but I don't think it's going back to 5 days. And so we are sort of pro, you know, places that are commutable to the city. You got to remember as well, though, is that the places close to the city will always be super desirable because a lot of jobs, especially business owners, they don't want to be working from home a lot. And so a lot of execs, a lot of they need to be on the ground, a lot of positions. They can't just work from home. They need to be out in construction, for example. And if one party, you know, even if it's the husband or the wife has a job that requires, maybe they're in the hospitals or something like that, right? And they need to be, they can't work from home, then that the commute problem starts again. And so you also find that, so the inner ring properties will always do really well. And people, a lot of people do like that city vibe and that city in and out, especially people who aren't from Australia. They've grown up in, you know, smaller places all around the world. And they say, if I'm going to live in Sydney, I'm going to live in the action. And so when migration kicks off, again, is you'll find that a lot of people from around the world are more than happy to have a bigger two-bedroom apartment or a three-bed apartment somewhere in a lifestyle location around the capital city, around Sydney in particular, because, yeah, they if they, you know, their friends and families come and visit from around the world, they want to be in the action, and they're more than happy to live in a smaller space. So we're definitely for, inner ring property still. And we do think that, you know, as the city gets bigger, busier and the roads get busier and the public transport gets busier as well, the pressure cooker, especially if populations in Sydney, for example, go from 5 to 6 to 7 to 8 million over time, those commutes become harder. And that then puts pressure again back on the inner ring. So yeah, you've got to be gutsy to say the inner ring's going to die. I'd say the inner ring's going to be super strong. So are the lifestyle hubs and so are the bigger houses in the lifestyle hubs in the middle and outer ring.
After hearing about common investing mistakes, let's look towards the flip side. Bates shares one of his aha realizations.
Look, I think it's I do a lot of reading around sort of how cities form. I'll track every development, etc. And I think once people understand how a city is going to grow, and how you've got little sanctuaries and NIMBYism in capital cities and heritage overlays, etc., you can start to really formulate that these pockets will be great longer term and they've got lower risk because they're likely to be offering the same lifestyle benefits long term. And as the city gets bigger and more places get knocked down and rebuilt, these sanctuaries become even more desirable. And so I think that it's just really through those constant sort of research and understanding, you know, how the city's going to grow, you can then sort of apply that in really any city, to be honest. You could say, well, where do people in this city that are doing well financially, where do they want to live? You know, why do they want to live there? What's the reasons? It's the type of housing, it's the lifestyle benefits, it's the bigger blocks, it's the, you know, heritage overlays, et cetera. And so you want to be in these parts of the market, no matter where you're investing, rather than the more, you know, affordable part of the market.
We'll continue to explore Chris Bates' journey in a future episode of Property Investory. We'll hear about his strategy.
I think the hot buy and hold strategy is the best strategy.
The resources that Bates used to kick off his own property investment journey.
I really love Pete Wargent. You know, Pete is a very smart chap who really understands, you know, a lot around property and does a lot of research. And so I'd say his blogs was definitely a key sort of part of the picture.
The best advice that Bates has received?
Go out and see the world and invest in yourself and invest in your knowledge and just really have a crack at it and believe in yourself.
And that's next time on Property Investory. If you love the show, perhaps you're now ready to invest your money in a low-risk, high-return deal. If you are, then SMS me your name and email address on 0499881040 to become a lender. There are amazing opportunities in the property market right now, and I'm looking for lenders who want to invest their money for as short as 6 months. What are you waiting for? Don't let your money just sit in the bank. To register your interest, text me your name and email address on 0499881040.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.